Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol and Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stan, look at Davis Mills' neck. Have you ever seen a more powerful neck than that? It almost doesn't look real, does it?
It's a long, tough neck. I mean,
right.
Like Mike Tyson's got a big old tough neck.
Right, but not as this is long.
This one's
right.
Proportional.
It's just
is like when you see a NFL player or a big dude who's like 6'6", 6'7", but looks like if he weren't standing next to anybody else that's 6 foot tall. I mean, just proportionally, like Shaq. In basketball, if Shaq is just in a picture, you might think he's a 6 foot tall guy. That neck looks like it's the right proportion, except for it's long and big.
Right. It's like it's a tree stump is what it is on his shoulders. So count me as a Davis Mills fan.
Right.
I'm rooting for him to succeed. Okay, Stan, we are going to play some different clips from Steve Spagnuolo because I don't know if this shocks you, but the biggest topic of the week all week has been the Chiefs' defensive performance or lack thereof the first couple of weeks. And so what I thought we'd do because, Andy really doesn't say anything in his press conferences. It's a lot of coach speak, and that's what Andy does. He's been doing this for a long time. He doesn't want to give up anything. Eric Bieniemy, I think, is good, and he's evolved, and he's a lot better than when he first took over as offensive coordinator. I enjoyed listening to Eric Bieniemy, but I always wish, and it's getting closer to that, that people can hear the Eric Bieniemy that when you have him off to the side, like when I used to interview him one-on-one when he was a running backs coach. And I thought, boy, this is going to be great. And then you could tell someone got to him, and he held back quite a bit when he first became offensive coordinator. But now you're starting to see more of his personality show because he's got a great personality and he is fun to talk football with. I just felt like he was very reserved when he took over as offensive coordinator, but that's changed a little bit. Spagnuolo, comfortable in the skin. He's been there, done that. I love listening to him talk football. I don't love all football press conferences when the coaches speak, but I think he's terrific and I do think you could take things away from what he says. And so I thought we'd play some, and I just want to get your reaction because that's all anyone's talking about. And people ask me, I've had several appearances this week, hey, what do they do to fix the defense? I'm like, where do you want me to start? So let's listen to some Spags, and I want to get your thoughts and see how you react to some of the things that he had to say. He comes out yesterday. Did you guys listen to it when he comes out there? And he was on the offensive because he kind of knew what the questions were, and I was interested to hear how he approached everything. Let's listen to Spags. He didn't even wait for questions about the performance in the red zone because he knew those were coming.
I know most of your questions are going to be red zone. You're going to go there, I'm sure. I understand it. I get it. I hope you can understand that I'm not going to go deep into the solutions, how we're going to change it, how we're going to fix it, because I'm talking to the Chargers, right? I'm not going to do that. I will say that there's been an extreme focus on it. The players have taken ownership. The coaches have taken ownership. We did have some wrinkles in last week in the red zone, one that I thought worked pretty good and one not so good. So we were kind of 50-50 on any changes, but it needs to get better. It begins with a lot of things. I mean, the basic football in the red zone, which is just kind of burr up and man up, like we say. So that was the two teams that we've played have been pretty challenging in that regard, red zone and the run defense. Hopefully it'll make us better going forward. But what we're putting out there right now obviously is not good enough. I think we all know that.
Stan, the Chiefs were very outspoken, saying an emphasis was placed in the offseason on improving the red zone defense. And after the first 2 weeks, it has been worse. The two teams scoring at a rate of 100% in the red zone touchdowns. And so it's just been terrible. What have you seen? What have been the major problems, especially in the red zone, that you've seen from this defense?
Well, first of all, when you quote those stats, I think we need to take a deep breath. It's a problem. It was a problem last year. 100% touchdown is awful. It should be coming in at 65, 70% touchdowns. But they did play two teams that feel very comfortable, almost like fish in water in that locale. The Ravens are running an old-style football offense that has an extra runner in it with a quarterback, and that's what you need to be able to do to be successful in the red zone, so they're hard to deal with. And then the Cleveland Browns have backs that can finish through contact. The defenders can be right there. Spags can draw stuff up and say, okay, at the three-yard line, big contact's going to occur, but guess what? The Cleveland running backs win the battle and fall all the way to the end zone. So you're talking about elite finishers. And so I think we got to step back a second. A lot of teams, when it's at the goal line, second and goal at the one, how many teams in the NFL are going to throw and then throw? And maybe even on fourth down, throw again. So you're going to play a whole different style NFL football than they've seen so far. So it's a bad matchup. Now, the worst thing that they did in the red zone, because that's the 20-yard line on in, is situations where it's third and seven or eight, and you're near the 15-yard line. That is giant advantage defense. And Chris Collinsworth even said that, I think, right as the play was unfolding. Yeah, I know they haven't been good in the red zone, but here there's no way they can let a first down occur. And sure enough, pass complete, short of the first down. He wiggles his way through and gets a first down against the Chiefs. So what do the Chiefs need to do? Spagnuolo said it the best. I mean, he told you everything you need to know, and I love listening to him. He and Patrick Mahomes tell you what really is going on. They are comfortable in their skins. This is good football information. Did he call it burr up?
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
Well, I guess I just kind of said that at the three-yard line, my example, that the tackler is there, make a play. Now, Tyrann Mathieu is the difference maker for the Chiefs defense, according to me. I mean, if you listen to this every Friday, if you follow what I talk about, I think Tyrann Mathieu is a giant difference maker that makes the Chiefs a Super Bowl type of football team. But he is about cute plays, being where you don't expect him to be, reading plays. He almost had another interception at the goal line that could have ended that drive. I mean, what was he doing over there? I mean, he is everywhere on those kind of plays. But physically running up and bringing his shoulder pads and blowing some up at the goal line, that's not really his strength. So Tyrann Mathieu isn't the same player at the 10-yard line as he is at the 50-yard line, if that makes sense. He's your best guy. And in Chris Jones' play, is to blow things up in the middle. I'll go back. You know, this is a big theme this week, right? Chris Jones playing defensive end. Well, if they listen to us to talk football, do we talk football year-round around here?
Pretty much.
Am I on every Friday with you guys?
Right.
I mean, I said all along, there's a couple of themes that I'm going to put out there that I've said forever. Chris Jones being a defensive end is fine. He has the body type, and he may be really good. But when you take a guy away from what he's really great at, and that's blowing things up in the middle, as a defensive tackle, it always concerns me, and I do not think who they sub in for him can replicate that so that we get 1 plus 1 equals 2. No, you get 0 in the middle, and now you move him out, and you hope you get a 1 in this example. So that and the offensive line acting like it's a finished product just because they got some new guys, those two things are not things I believe in. So that right now, Chris Jones isn't even at his best position. Tyrann Mathieu isn't a big red zone type of helper, and the Chiefs defense isn't very good stopping the run for many, many years. So that is not a good equation to stopping people in the red zone.
I'm going back to an article written by Adam Teicher in June talking about how the Chiefs are emphasizing improving the red zone defense. And he writes, the Chiefs had the worst defense in the NFL last year when opponents moved inside the 20. They allowed a touchdown 77% of the time, and also Jake in the Super Bowl. They allowed Tampa to score 3 touchdowns from inside the 20. And it was costly during their 2 regular season losses when the Chiefs gave up 7 touchdowns and 8 red zone tries. And Spags had said, if we had just played 50% better in the red zone last year, it would have made a huge difference. And so if you're wondering what they did in 2019, the Chiefs were tied for 9th in red zone defense in their championship year, allowing a touchdown 51% of the time. And something else that stands out is quarterbacks in the red zone. Opposing quarterbacks had a QBR of 89.7 in the red zone, which was 29th. The league average was 70.3. And in 2019, the QBR was only 41.5 from quarterbacks against the Chiefs in the red zone. The Chiefs had a league-high 4 interceptions, including, you remember, one in the end zone that was made by Daniel Sorensen that won the game against the Chargers. And so you could see there's a huge difference from 2019 to 2020, and now so far, I know the matchups, like you said, have been bad, but it's been even worse this year, so it is a big
area of concern.
Against
these two teams.
Right.
Against these two
Absolutely.
Teams. And I'll add one more guy before we break. Anthony Hitchens, I like him as a player. He came from Dallas. Everyone asked me what I thought of him. I said, The guy will hustle. He's a great team player. He's a leader. But he doesn't hit anybody at the line of scrimmage. He's the best tackler for a four-yard gain in the world. And at the goal line, that doesn't cut it. Okay? I'm just saying.
Right, no,
Anthony Hitchens is not built for the goal line. Tyrann Mathieu, not built for the goal line. Dan Sorensen, not built for the goal line. So the Jimmies and Joes matter here as Spags gets them in their spots. They got to finish the play. It'll get better, though. It will get better.
We've got Stan Weber in studio talking football on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, let's play another clip from Spags on the another hot topic the last couple of weeks. And it's the lack of playing time, especially this past week for Thornhill, because he played plenty in the first game because Tyrann Mathieu was out. But then only 11 snaps on Sunday night against the Ravens, and Daniel Sorensen played every snap. And so Todd Lebo asked Spags about Sorensen and Thornhill, and how do they decide on playing time? You know, what input he has and the other and the position coaches and how they arrive at their decision. Here is Spags on Sorensen and Thornhill.
Yeah, there's dialogue on that all the time. Look, Juan's done a good job. He's had spurts of good football. But when you talk about what you're asking about is a position change. A position change has got to be merited when somebody's not playing well, and we need improvement there. I mean, if you ask Dan, I'm sure he'd tell you he wants to play better. If you asked any of the 11 guys that play the positions on defense, I'm sure they're going to tell you they want to play better. Juan's done some good things for us. He just needs to earn his way back. We talked, Juan and I had a conversation on Tuesday. The game, obviously, the first game, Tyrann didn't play, so Juan was out there a lot. In this game, Tyron's coming back, and Dan's in there. So what did happen is we, you know, in the packages that Juan is in there for, we weren't in them very much. I mean, Baltimore kept us in our base package, and it's just two safeties out there. So we'll see where it goes. We're going to need, before it's all said and done, we're going to need everybody. Juan, Dan, everybody.
So a couple of things I took away. He said Juan has played spurts of good football. He's done some good things. He needs to earn his way back.
That's the best information that any football fan who really wants to get into it and understand football, but maybe is missing that one step to get into the realm of really understanding football. All you got to do is listen to that statement by Spagnuolo right there. Fans, coaches cannot play in this elite level of competition without having guys who are reliable and do what they're supposed to do. It is an 11-man orchestra on defense. If you are the greatest drummer in the world, but you're playing a different song than everyone else in the band, what do you have? A messed up song. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Everyone wants to bash the athleticism of a Dan Sorensen and talk about Juan Thornhill. Hey, Juan Thornhill, I love his athleticism. I love his playmaking ability. And I can't wait till he plays 55 plays a game for the Chiefs, because he will do it only when he earns the trust of the coaches. And most fans, and I, all my buddies the same way, they don't understand this at all. They say, you got to stick Juan Thornhill in. We're no chance of winning with guys like Dan Sorensen playing all the time. You got to take a shot. Go with the guy. And why do these guys love the old guys? Why do they want trust? What, this guy's fine. No, you break down everything when you don't do what you're supposed to do. You've got to be perfection, all 11 guys being predictable in what they do. The easiest thing is think about a pass play. Quarterback throws it before a receiver turns. The receiver turns. If they're on the same page, easy completion. If they're not, the ball's flying through the air. The receiver's in another spot, and you might have an interception. This is the most devalued thing in fandom is the trust factor. Don't say Juan Thornhill. These guys are going to play their best guys. They want to win, but they have to play guys they trust. So every team I hear talked about, you hear this. You know, why don't they play these guys? They're so much more exciting. They look better. They don't do what they're supposed to do. Play after play after play. They don't make the right checks. They don't have the right communication. They don't make the right switches. You can't play guys you don't trust. So quit calling out for Ron. Let Thornhill play. When he plays, let's cheer. But until then, he's not good enough to be the best defense the Chiefs have. Sorensen is reliable, and that means everything to the NFL success.
You know who I trust?
Who?
You.
I appreciate that.
Stan Weber. I trust that he'll do the right thing. You too, I don't know. I mean, hell, I don't know.
Nate's not jumping up and saying he trusts me, so that's one out of two. 50%. Jake, I don't know. That's two. Two out of three. 67%.
You maybe. Him, I don't know.
I trust all three of you completely.
Really?
I don't trust
anybody.
Let's
do that trust fall in the commercial.
That sounds like that's Andy Reid-ism right there. You didn't. You said just all three of us. I trust everybody. Andy Reid trusts everybody. We're going to get better.
Talk on it.
Coach talk.
Maybe I don't trust anyone. I'm rethinking this.
Oh, wait a second. That's why the breaks are awesome.
Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We have a few more clips from Spags before we move on from the defensive struggles. Hopefully the Chiefs will move on from the defensive struggles. This was somewhat of a follow-up to Steve Spagnuolo's thoughts on Daniel Sorensen and Juan Thornhill. Todd Lebo followed up and asked why Daniel Sorensen, and if you don't know, according to Pro Football Focus, Dan Sorensen leads the NFL with 11 missed tackles, and the next guy has six. And so he's had some issues so far in the first couple of games. But listening to this, again, Spags gives a really good answer that makes sense, and here's what he had to say when Todd Lebo asked about those missed tackles.
To me, what I think that is with Dan is just a little bit coming under control. The one thing we love about Dan is he's not going to miss a tackle being soft. Mm-hmm. That's not a bad thing, you know. And I think once he gets himself, I believe, I'd have to go back, but I'm almost certain the same thing happened to Dan last year. No preseason games. We came out for the first two games. The missed tackles were there last year, too. And Dan became, you know, really one of our consistent most aggressive tacklers. So we're not ready to panic on that right now, and I know he's not.
So we think about that. Like, we think about, you know, like in baseball, hitters getting into a groove or pitchers getting into a groove, or even in football, you know, quarterbacks getting into a groove, throwing the ball, or you hear, you know, running back, he starts to really feel it when he's, you know, gets, you know, 10 or 11 carries, and then he starts to, you know, again, get into a groove. There, when you listen to Spags, he talked about, first of all, he doesn't miss tackles being soft. And I don't know, is that a shot at somebody else, or is he telling you, hey, you know, Sorensen's going up there and trying to make the big hit, and he's physical, and so, or is he, I mean, I kind of.
It sure
like,
sounds like it to me, because he said about the red zone defense, you got to burr up and man up. So
right.
He's challenging the manhood of some guys on his team.
Right. I think there's a little bit there to it. But then also, he talked about, well, this happened last year, and it took him a couple of games to bring himself, like you said, under control. And then you kind of figure things, your timing or whatever it is, and then you settle down and you play better. And it seems like that's what he's indicating with Daniel Sorensen. Like, hey, this happened last year. It takes him a couple of games to get going, figure things out, get your timing down. And then he was fine, and he was one of our best tacklers the rest of the year. What did you take away from those comments about Sorensen and the missed tackle, Stan?
Well, first of all, not what I took away, but what I would state is in baseball, we look at averages. And Dan Sorensen's probably played more plays than any defender in the NFL. So we can't just do a gross number of missed tackles, because many guys have two players play a position and so forth. Dan Sorensen's played almost every defensive play for the Chiefs. So, but first of all, he shouldn't be missing tackles. He comes and he's an aggressive tackler. I think we mentioned this a little bit. Some of the other guys, even linebackers, aren't necessarily the hardest hitters. So Dan Sorensen's kind of got a role to play of being someone who's going to pop somebody. The other thing I think is Dan Sorensen has – and I sound like I'm an apologist for him. I don't love Dan Sorensen, but I think he understands the game. The game in the NFL is, I said last week, is won right before you get to the field goal range, about the 45-yard line, going in, getting 3 points, and getting a touchdown in the red zone, okay, getting four extra points. Those are things. But otherwise, it's on third down. And usually when Dan Sorensen gets there on a third and four play, a third and seven play, when does he get there? About a yard before the first down could be made. So I think Dan Sorensen says, it's not time for me to just grab the guy and throw him down and not let him have a 20-yard run. It's time for me to rock him, knock him backwards, and force a punt. So it's somewhat of a game situation. He's there at that point, and that's so frustrating when he misses that tackle. Guess what? You're mad because he got a first down. So he even shows up more when we watch him. We're like, come on, Dan. You just gave him a first down. Why didn't you knock him backwards? But I think he comes with a physicality. I think he comes on a part of the field that says, I got to rock guys backwards, and there are not many people on the field that do that. But still, you can't miss tackles. He's not playing at a high level. He's not a dominant player. Sure, the Chiefs would be a better defense if he got beat out. There's no doubt about that. I'm not saying he should be the starter for a five-time Super Bowl champion Chiefs, but until someone does beat him out and becomes reliable, he's your best guy. I don't question that he should be in the game, but he's got to be better. And I still am going to emphasize, the two teams they played are the baddest running dudes in the whole NFL. They bring it with physicality. They bring it with a commitment to the run. The Ravens used to not commit to the run. I've been yelling and screaming. I think the Ravens are more dangerous to the Chiefs than we think they are over the last few years. Lamar Jackson is not good enough dropping back and passing and winning the game, so the Chiefs are better. But the Ravens, when you go back and look at the games against the Chiefs, basically have passed the ball as much as they've ran. Maybe passed the ball more. The NFL coordinators cannot run the football. It's not in their blood. Andy Reid's taught them, you win the game by throwing the football. And so they all throw, even though the best chance to beat the Chiefs over the last 4 years has been to run when you're the Ravens. Finally, when they were injured, backs to the wall, lost to the Raiders, a short week, what did they do? They stayed committed to the run. I think they're dangerous. If they would play the Chiefs like this, the games are going to be much closer than Chiefs fans think. Lamar's not just going to give the game away because they are committed to the run. Back to the point, the Chiefs have played two teams that are committed to the run more than everybody else. Let's get back to normal throwing football and see what the Chiefs can do.
So the I was thinking about this when you made when you made the point earlier about what Honey Badger's best at, what Sorensen's best at, and a lot of these guys on this defense. The old school, and it's not even that old school, but the long-held belief is, if you got this great offense that can light up the scoreboard, you want to build a defense that can stop the pass more than you want to build a defense that can stop the run.
Because
you're going to get a lead, and then they're going to have to pass, right? Like, that's what the Colts did all the time when they won the Super Bowl with Peyton Manning. He was like, let's just get two good edge rushers. Let's make sure they were never good against the run. But we're going to score so much that other teams realize they got to abandon the run at some point. So if we got to prioritize something, we want to stop the pass. Is that what we're seeing here with the Chiefs, and that they just went up against two run teams, and once they start playing other teams that actually do have to start throwing the ball more when they're behind, that this is going to look better? And is that outdated thinking?
The question you said is, are they emphasizing it? And I don't necessarily think it's a choice by strategy. Okay. It is what they are, though.
Okay.
I don't need to get into, do they believe
they
they're going to give
make
some
it that way?
Exactly.
That way.
I just think, when they put the team together, they end up with these guys, okay? And what they are is what you concluded. They're going to be better when Patrick Mahomes scores another touchdown. The best way for the Chiefs to win games is to get ahead and then be the team that gets a two-score lead. So even if the other team moves the ball on you, you go up by 10, they go score a touchdown, it's 3. Patrick goes back up, and we score first, and it goes back up by 10. And the whole time the defense is out there, they can give up a touchdown and not give up the lead. So they're not under a lot of pressure. And the other team will start passing more and more and more. These coordinators, they want to score points. That's how they get paid. They get prestige and pat on the back and promotions by scoring points. And they think you do it in the passing game. They don't. So they're going to lean to the pass more and more. So having pass rushers, cornerbacks that lock down, guys like Tyrann Mathieu who intercept passes, it's a great way to play. But your offense has got to cover your defense under that philosophy. And you can win Super Bowls that way. But if you can stuff the run and be physical on the defensive side, you get into another realm. Pittsburgh Steelers have been there for a long, long time. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers got there at the end of last year. Tampa stuffed the run. Did you watch the Dallas Thursday night game?
Yes.
Everyone's bashing Ezekiel Elliott for getting nowhere. There was nothing he could do. They don't let you run the football. They stuff you for 0 yards. And the Cowboys' plan was perfect. Just throw. Throw every down. You're not going to run against Tampa Bay. How much better is that? Then when you know you're going to pass, Tampa can also rush you, right? But the Chiefs are much more made for Chris Jones, Frank Clark to blow things up, Tyrann Mathieu to blitz and get some stuff done. They got some cornerbacks who can come off the edge, are good pass rushers. So, yeah, get the lead, dictate by stopping the passing game is what the Chiefs are best at. And that's why it scares me, teams like Cleveland. And if the Ravens would call plays right like they did this last week.
They stuck with it.
Run and believe in the run. It's not good for the Chiefs to have to face that if it's a close game.
So the other thing about that Spags said about this safety situation, I want to ask you, because he said position change about Juan Thornhill. Like, if you're asking me to play Juan Thornhill over Sorensen, you're asking for a position change. So what he's basically saying there is Juan Thornhill doesn't play Sorensen's position. He plays Tyrann Mathieu's position. And I think a lot of people have gotten to the point where it seems like, I kind of was under the impression, these guys all kind of play every position in the secondary. Spagnuolo moves them around so much. What do you make of that? Is it really that big of a difference what Sorensen does versus what Honey Badger does? And can you
yes,
maybe break
is.
That down for
me? It is different, and it used to be strong safety and free safety were completely different,
right.
And every team did it the same way. Strong safety was up in the linebacker area. Because remember, in the old days, teams ran in the NFL 55, 60% of the time.
Right.
So a strong safety would be ready to come in, be a bigger
Steve
guy.
Atwater,
from the Broncos. But now, in the passing game, you're playing five DBs. So you could even have a third corner or safety that become interchangeable. They move. They want to change coverages, so they have different guys. You know, sometimes you'll see Dan Sorensen in the hole, you call it, which is free safety running back 25 yards from the ball. Eric Berry used to be back there, you know, at times. But basically, Sorensen is more likely to be playing from the line of scrimmage to 15 yards. Not every down, so it becomes predictable. But most of the time, no matter where he lingers before the ball snapped, he's going to come in and play in that tough man area right there. And then the free safety types of the old days are going to swing around and be more pass coverage guys, helpers, playing cover two or in the free safety. And that's Thornhill. Thornhill is not a good player to go try to make tackles 5 yards down the line, past the line of scrimmage. So they are two different players. But nowadays it's okay, Nate, to just say they're safeties. Because it... You know, you can be a free safety. Eric Berry is a good example. Sometimes Eric Berry would be 25 yards from the line of scrimmage before the ball was snapped, and other times he'd be blitzing. So what do the NFL coaches all tell you? It's about matchups. They think of it more like basketball, like one-on-one. Put guys in situation to make plays. Kelsey's put into situations to make plays. It really is the same thing on defense. So they can't have that guy do that every single time. It becomes too predictable. But basically, it's pretty simple. Just put this in your mind. Dan Sorensen needs to be up in the linebacker area to be his best self. And Thornhill needs to be 20 yards downfield playing in a 7-on-7 passing game to be his best self. So generally, that's where they're going to excel. Generally, that's where Spags is going to try to get them.
Okay, let's hear what Spags had to say about the defensive line. That's been another issue that's been a hot topic here. Darren Smith asked Spags what he sees on film when it comes to his defensive line struggling the first couple of games.
Look, at some downs, that's what happens. Some downs, there's a couple of mental errors and mistakes there. Some downs, they're better than we are. There were some downs we were better than they were. When it was all said and done, you know, they did it better. I don't know what, everybody's got to do their job better. I'm not sure, you know, we can go out. I mean, we're not going to go out and put full pads on a scrimmage. You know, so we got to get it fixed, you know, with the way you get it fixed in the NFL. People do it. Our guys have been down this road before. We were here in 2019. And then somewhere along the way, I know we went 16 points, 3 points, 3 points. I don't know what the other stats were, but I know what the points were. So that's what we want to do.
And let's play Spags number 5 as a follow-up. Steve Spagnuolo was asked how he thought Frank Clark played against the Ravens.
Yeah, I thought Frank did a pretty solid job. I grabbed him yesterday on the field because I thought there's three I can think of where he's not going to get credit for anything, but I thought he pushed the offensive tackle, and I felt like the quarterback felt it. I mean, that's a good thing. And he hadn't, you know, Frank hasn't had a lot of playing. You know, I mean, I didn't have any preseason games, and he was out for a lot of time. That takes a little while to get going. So, but that was a step in the right direction, I thought.
Okay, we're going to play one more because both of these guys were listed as limited participants in yesterday's practice. Frank Clark, the hamstring problem again. That's not good because that's why he was out for the first game. And so now he's back on the injury list, limited participant with a hamstring issue. And Chris Jones has been a limited participant Wednesday and Thursday with a wrist problem. Here, they talked to Brandon Daly, the defensive line coach, and he was asked how he thinks Chris Jones has played so far at defensive end.
Well, I think he's done a great job with what we've asked him to do. I would say those, you know, the first two games have presented some different challenges to us, no question, as this game is going to this week. He's done a great job in terms of working hard, trying to do exactly what we've asked him to do. There are some things that are still a little bit foreign to him, or a little, I should say, he doesn't have as much time on the job with them, that he's working through. And he's done a great job of detailing that to the best of his ability. I'm kind of pleased with the direction that's going. We all know that that is still a work in progress, and you know, as it is for everybody. We're grinding each and every day to try to improve and get better, and that's kind of where we're at with it.
Okay, so there was a lot there. See Spagnuolo talking about the defensive line and Frank Clark, and then defensive line coach Brandon Daly talking about Chris Jones. A very heavy investment has been paid, has been made into Chris Jones and Frank Clark. They brought in Jaron Reed as a free agent. They spent draft capital on guys like Derek Nnadi and Colin Saunders. And again, it may be because of the matchups, but the defensive line has underperformed so far. What about what Spags and Daly had to say, and your thoughts on the performance of the defensive line so far, including Frank Clark and Chris Jones?
Well, I'm no Aaron Rodgers fan, and when he say R-E-L-A-X, was it last year, about the Packers, and we're going to be fine, I think we do need to factor in that every season's a new season, and this game against the Chargers is high risk. You can't take for granted things, but in general, I think the Chiefs coaches believe, Andy Reid believes, they're going to be in the playoffs, they're probably going to win the division, and it's a 17-game schedule. The end line is even further away, and you want to peak. Remember he said we've been here before? Spags said we've been here before. We were getting run over in 19, but whoa, at the end of the year, when it got to the end of the season, the Chiefs played good defense, and they kept working toward that. This football team is based upon superstars and offense with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. You'll be unbelievable if your defense is good as well. But the defense might end up being good at the end if they're patient and stick with the plan and they have working room. They are going to win this division. So it's okay for us to be patient and let them work toward what they can be a better version of the Chiefs' defense, especially against two offensive teams, like I said, that expose the Chiefs worse than anything. So I think what they'd say is let's relax a little bit. Let's let Frank Clark grow. Did I use the example of Salvador Perez on the air, or was it off the air?
That was off the air.
It was off the air.
Yep.
Okay. We just keep talking, fans. It just keeps on
the
rolling.
The show never stops.
That's right.
I talk about Frank Clark like Salvador Perez. He's a great hitter and has unbelievable capabilities. But next year, as he's an older player, I do not want to see the Royals use him at first base every day.
Now, you said Frank Clark this time.
I mean Salvador Perez.
But Chris Jones was who
Chris Jones. I'm totally messing up here.
No worries.
Salvador Perez
is
a great catcher in addition to all the hitting he can do. I want to see him play catcher. So Chris Jones is a great defensive tackle that is unique in the NFL, blowing people up. I want to see him do that. But he could be a defensive end, and he might be a very good one. What worries me is if Salvador Perez played first base every day, only played catcher like twice a week, I think he would lose part of his edge of being a great catcher because he would be so focused on catching bad throws and grounders and how do you play the bunt from the first. His mind's changed. Chris Jones in the last fourth down play got blown up like he is a college player. You go back and watch the seventh grade run over the left side by the Ravens on 4th and 2. Okay? Chris Jones, they ran right at Chris Jones. And he got double-teamed, and what happened? He got pushed backwards 3 yards and shoved to the middle, and they made a first down. Chris Jones in the middle of the line on a big play with a defensive tackle mentality that I'm just going to blow things up, would he ever have that happen to him? My point is no. He had a defensive end mentality. He was being read all day where he's sitting there going, I don't know if I should go for the quarterback or the running back. I can't do the answer right. That's the zone read. You're unblocked. You become a player who has different skill sets, a different mindset. And on that fourth down play, Chris Jones was put back in his old place of blowing people up, and he didn't do it. He got blocked like a mother. Okay? So I thought going into the year, and I may be wrong, I'm contradicting myself, I wanted him to play defensive tackle some. I wanted Chris Jones to play defensive tackle and defensive end. but maybe I'm wrong, because can he have the mindset of – is he just better off having a mindset of a defensive end and just going with it? And I think Spagnuolo is right now saying stick with it. Let's see how good he is at the end of the year. It's his first year to play defensive end. I'm going to give him a little room to breathe. I think the Chiefs are going to win the division. It's going to be frustrating watching it unfold, and it scares me this week because I do think every season is a new season and the Chargers have a chance to beat the Chiefs. And if the Chiefs are 1-2 and Denver beats the Jets and they're 3-0, if the Raiders can beat Miami 3-0, and the Chargers beat you head-to-head and beat you at home and you lost two in a row, you can't take anything for granted. I still think the Chiefs are the best. I don't think the whole season's on the line, but this is what's great about the NFL. The division teams play each other closer. I don't know if you guys have any concern, but this Charger team can cause some problems to the Chiefs. And so I expect a fairly close game. And you can't, you do not want to go 1-2 and lose a home game to a division foe like the Chargers, in my opinion.
And we don't, you know, we need to see they can say everything that they've said in the press conferences, but we got to see that the run defense is better. And again, San Diego or L.A. can't run the ball.
I love that. That's good. I like that, San Diego.
They can't run the ball like Cleveland or Baltimore.
Not at all.
And there's what other team will be able to exploit Chris Jones and his inexperienced defensive end the way Baltimore did?
That's a non-NFL game.
Right.
No one has the college offense. Chris Jones didn't do anything wrong. He was unblocked, and they're going to read him. So if he goes with the quarterback, they give the running back. If he goes with the running back, they give the quarterback. He didn't play awful. It's just the scheme made him look bad.
That, Einstein said that if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, you'll think it's an idiot. Right? And so, like, you put Chris Jones out in space and tell him, you got to read and react Lamar Jackson. Well, now you're asking him to do something that he's not capable of doing. And he is an attack-minded, like you said, get-up-the-field player. And there are times when that works at defensive end. He had I think we are forgetting a little bit the two massive sacks that he had that completely turned the game around against the Browns in week one.
And the tackle on the screen was the greatest play of the game. That thing was going to go for another 30 yards when Cleveland was trying to score. Remember the interception?
Yeah.
Came from midfield only because Chris Jones hustled from behind and tackled Chubb on the screen.
So when he can line up a defensive end and the job is get up the field, And I think he'll be able to cause a lot of problems for a lot of tackles because he's got explosion and power. But if his job at defensive end is contain the edge and sit back and read this play, that's not putting him in a position of strength. And so, I think they're going to have to sort those things out. We were all of the impression that this change to defensive end was not an every down situation, right? This was you don't know where Chris Jones is going to line up. And what a nightmare that might be for the other team because, oh, my God, now he's going to blow me up, and I'm at left guard. And now he's lining up at defensive end.
That's what I thought he would be best at, moving around. But maybe they need to teach him to play defensive end so much and get the repetition that they – I think they overbelieve in their inside guys. If they just think – if they think so much – here's the logic we heard during the offseason, right? That the interior guys that they've gotten are so good that they could afford to move Chris Jones to the outside. I do not buy into that at all. Chris Jones is so much better than those guys that are replacing him. You are actually losing something and making a choice to put him out at the defensive end.
And well, we haven't seen anything from Reed yet, right? Like the first two games, and he's supposed to be able to get at least create pass rush from the defensive tackle position, and he hasn't done it yet.
Chris Jones is so unique, and even he doesn't set the middle. You talk about setting the edge.
Oh, yeah.
What was his criticism? At least my criticism of him always.
No, Brett Veach said this.
He didn't even worry about stopping the run.
Right.
He blew up run plays once in a while.
Right.
But not every down by being reliable, taking on three blockers and tackling the running back. Also, he exploded upfield, knocked a guard or a center back into the play, -4, got to the quarterback. But a lot of times they could bait him in to running right where he left. You know, like the New England Patriots running the football or something, they kind of sneaky get behind him, and you go, where was Chris Jones? So even in the inside, he didn't set his position. He blew things up. He does that well. He's so athletic. He's so aggressive. He's really a great player. And I don't know if my Salvador Perez example makes example because he's a really great player. Steven, I love what you said about him, you know, statue and all those things. But if you just played him at first base every day, he'd be a great hitter, Well, but, man, we would be missing out on something that he does so well, which is calling those pitches and leading the team from a catcher position.
And, you know, at some point.
And Mike McFarland would not like that. And I know Mike McFarland well.
He wouldn't. But
he's on Fridays on the Border Patrol.
The Chiefs are going to have, or the Royals are going to have some tough decisions with MJ Melendez coming up and Salvi and trying to get both those guys in the lineup at the same time. And how much does Salvi catch?
How much is this the same as saying, oh, Jaron Reed's going to be so good at defensive tackle, we can have Chris Jones have our cake and eat it too? Be careful about moving Salvi out of the catcher position when you're thinking. I know I'm no baseball expert.
No, but
think about that, Steven. It's a tough call.
Oh, yeah, but here's the deal. Jaron Reed, they brought him in, but I feel like Melvin Ingram was the first choice because they brought him in early, right? He was one of the first guys they brought in for a visit. And for whatever reason, they couldn't get a deal done. Because theoretically, we all think it, you know, the plan A, Melvin Ingram, bring him in, edge rusher, Chris Jones stays where he is. And if you see, and again, Melvin Ingram, one of the criticisms of him is you're not going to get 16 games out of him. He's only going to be a part-time player. But if you can manage him, you know, with load management, he could still be a successful pass rusher. He has 11 quarterback pressures so far in two games for Pittsburgh. He has looked outstanding. And so just think about that. What if instead of Jaron Reed, it was Melvin Ingram that they brought in?
And let Chris Jones play his position. That's like, in my baseball example, that's like the up-and-coming player that's about ready to knock his way into the major leagues is Eric Hosmer at first base. Wouldn't it be great to say, let's bring up Eric Hosmer to play first base, and Salvi can stay as a catcher? But it's a lot harder when you say, well, maybe Salvi ought to play first base because we got, what, is it two catchers or three in a system that are not too far away from playing for the Royals.
You've got a few, but MJ Melendez.
But let's
right
go with Melendez.
Yeah, he's one of the best prospects.
This is
in
the
baseball.
Same. This is a bind. This isn't easy for these organizations. I can't cheer and say this is great. Bring Melendez up. Let that youngster get there. His knees are great. Get back there and start catching. And we'll still keep Salvi's bat by DHing him or playing first base. And I'm going, guys. Part of the Royals' excellence, a big part of the Royals' excellence, is his managing of pitchers. Salvador Perez. He looks like he's the Houston Texans quarterback's neck. I mean, when Salvador Perez...
That's something.
Mills, Davis Mills, okay?
Right.
Because when Salvi, you could watch on TV right behind the pitcher all the time, right? That's the shot they give us. Do you just watch a game and how good it looks if you were pitching when you see Salvador Perez cover up both sides of the batter's boxes. You know what I'm saying? How easy to say, I'm going to put a ball in the dirt and try to strike this guy out or make him... You don't worry about pass balls. Go watch other catchers. So, Salvador Perez is as good as you say he is, Stephen, and I think you say Hall of Fame and all of that.
Yes.
He's better because he's bringing along pitchers. Catcher's ability to do that, to make every pitcher better than they should be, is so much more than we ever give it credit for. We always talk about the pitcher stuff. The catchers make the pitchers better. They're calling the game. They're giving them confidence. And the ability to block the ball, throw runners out. Salvador Perez needs to be a catcher, man, to get the full worth. And Chris Jones, I'd rather have him at defensive tackle.
And part of that is Jaron Reed needs to play better, too, to justify that move. Because,
but it goes back to if Jaron Reed's biggest strength as a defensive tackle is getting into the backfield and getting sacks, he hasn't had the chance to do that much, in the first, especially last game, because the Ravens were running the ball the whole time.
That goes back to what Stan said about matchups.
Yep. So maybe this
I want to Steven. I want to say one thing for Steven just because I haven't talked about Bolton yet.
Oh, boy.
No, this is good.
Okay.
Not about 2021, but like 2023. Okay? Bolton's big physical stuff, the run, be a goal line player, all the things that Anthony Hitchin and the Chiefs don't have, is not good enough right now. But when Gay gets in there and he runs plays down, and now you got the big strong guy with the fast dude who can cover passes, the combination of those two could make us excited about the linebacker position. Both guys have a lot of work to do. They got to understand their assignments like Hitchens does and Sorensen and those guys. You've got to be reliable more than physical. But that is a good combination for Chiefs linebackers in the future, if that makes sense. But Bolton needs help because he shouldn't be guarding guys 15 yards down from the line of scrimmage. He needs to be popping people at the line of scrimmage and helping the Chiefs run defense. And Gay is the perfect complement in a two-linebacker set. So it'll be a little while before they're your best two linebackers. But hopefully that made you feel better.
Bolton once again became the hammer looking for the nail, as he was described when he was coming out of Mizzou in the draft. We've got Stan Weber in studio back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the show. All right, before I get your thoughts on K-State, Oklahoma State, big showdown in the Big 12, Stan, I wanted to, and you've probably already heard this, we played this a couple of times this week and got a kick out of it. For those who don't know, Stanton Weber is on the South Carolina football staff under Shane Beamer, and they played Georgia last week. And Georgia's really, really damn good and has maybe the best defense in college football. And so a reporter asked Shane Beamer what Georgia's defense did to make them so successful, or, you know, what they did in that game. And we enjoyed Shane Beamer's reaction, his answer. So have you heard this yet, Stan? We're going to play this
for
you.
Yeah, I did hear that one time.
Let's play it again. Let's, Jake, play it for people that haven't heard it.
What were they doing to maybe make things physical on the offensive side and maybe being able to get a push?
Who was doing?
Georgia's a defensive line. What were they doing to maybe make things difficult on the offense?
They've got like 105 star football players on their defense. They have a defensive lineman that weighs 340 pounds and runs better than everybody on this call. They've got 5-star defensive backs. They're big and physical and fast. I mean, other than that, they're really freaking good. That's why they have the top defense in the country. They're hard to run the football on. So there wasn't some magical scheme they came out with tonight. They got 5-star recruits everywhere, and they play really physical. Damn.
Well, that pretty much sums it up, doesn't it?
That's a young coach in postgame, right? That's postgame Zoom,
mm-hmm.
Not 2 days later. His dad hangs around, you know, one of the most famous coaches and most successful in college football history. Frank Beamer brought Virginia Tech out of nowhere into one of the great programs in the country. They are the K-State of the East. Bill Snyder and Frank Beamer are kind of the same guys. But his son Shane's first-time head coach. So I'm sure Frank, they talked on Sunday, like, what do you think, Dad? He goes, have you heard Andy Reid talk in press conferences? Just coach talk.
Right.
Don't be getting emotional. Don't be telling the truth.
Damn. You know?
But that's pretty good, wasn't it?
No, I loved it. It's true. I mean, like, you know, Jordan, you know, waves some magic wand, and here's this magical scheme that we're going to outcoach South Carolina.
15 years from now, he'll go, well, the opponent is good, and you know, we just didn't do what we wanted to do. We'll be better next week. Is that Andy Reid? We'll just... You know, we got some things to work on.
We got to look at the tape and get it corrected.
Yeah, you know, just like nothing.
All right,
Andy's great at that.
Let's spend the rest of the time talking about this big matchup.
College football.
6 o'clock kickoff. Number 25, Kansas State, 3-0. At Oklahoma State, also 3-0. But Kansas State has had better opposition so far. A lot of people were wondering what would happen against Nevada and that top-rated quarterback prospect, and K-State takes care of business 38-17, and now a chance to start our 4-0 and get a road win in Stillwater. Tell us what you know about Oklahoma State and how they match up against Kansas State.
First of all, I'm so excited to be 3-0 as a K-State fan and broadcaster. Oh, man, this has not been easy. Southern Illinois is a lot better than you think. Stanford's a lot better than everyone thinks. And that was a neutral site game in Dallas. And then, obviously, an NFL quarterback, when you're going against that against Nevada, the score was tied starting the fourth quarter. And Skylar Thompson's not playing. So for the Cats to put up 21 points and separate at the end to control the quarterback, except for one beautiful 55-yard play between two NFL guys, Dubs, the receiver, is ready to be in the NFL as well. K-State's defense has played great 3 straight weeks. Now, jumping ahead to Oklahoma State versus K-State, they're mirrors of each other. And this is a throwback 1970s game. You want to go back to the 60s, maybe go to the 80s. Both teams have such great running backs and believe in it that the defenses are scared of what those guys can do against them. So Deuce Vaughn has run for between 100 and 127 yards in every game this year and has been a threat and been able to do everything you want. And Joe Irvin is good behind him. So K-State's got those two good backs attacking you with quarterback run game, unique offense, great blocking up front. all those things K-State's going to bring. They only threw 13 passes in the last game. Will Howard, Jaron Lewis is a third-string quarterback that was planning to go into the game, and he's planned to go into this game as well. How good will K-State's quarterback play, be on the road? It'll be Howard's first chance to ever play a road game. He started 7 times last year, but it was pandemic. There was not the road crowd that you're going to see. So how will he function? Will he be able to protect the ball and all that? That's very important, but K-State's got that great running game. Oh, guess what Oklahoma State has? L.D. Brown's good. Dominic Richardson's good. Desmond Jackson's good. But they just found out. They got lucky in last week against Boise State. Jalen Warren is a transfer from Utah State. He's a superstar.
32 for 218 and 2 touchdowns against Boise State.
The only reason the defense is really good for Oklahoma State, the defense is good for K-State. But Warren, go Google just highlights, like a couple of runs that he had against Tulsa. When they played against Tulsa, they thought he was just a backup and got in there. He made a touchdown run from 10 yards that had like 7 guys missed tackles, and he walks in. I mean, it was Barry Sanders-like. And then he had another run like that, and you're saying, oh, this guy might be okay. They figured it out. Now, the good news for K-State is the Boise State game occurred. What happens if this would have been the game where they would have unleashed Jalen Warren and the running game, and K-State wasn't ready for him? I think Oklahoma State would have won the game. K-State is much helped that they saw what the new Oklahoma State is. That's protect Spencer Sanders. He's a starting quarterback that started 21 times, but he's not lighting it up in the passing game. And they don't have Tylan Wallace out there, and they don't have Chuba Hubbard. This is not Oklahoma State explosiveness. This is Oklahoma State playing great defense and not turning over the ball and protecting themselves with a very young receiving core. They're going to hand the ball off and pound if they can. K-State wants to hand the ball off and pound if they can. This is like we used to break down the games in the 70s and 80s and go, can you stop that great running back or two running backs? And until one team does, the other is really not going to want to pass the ball that much. I could say the game's going to be won by how the quarterbacks play and throw, and that's probably a good statement. You'll hear me say that in pregame, because if one of the teams ups their game and adds balance to their offense, that will separate two even football teams. But as of right now, both are very comfortable saying we're going to run the rock. And Oklahoma State, L.D. Brown, has 5 runs over 50 yards, many of them over 75 yards, and he had a 98-yard kickoff return for touchdown against Tulsa when their backs were to the wall, when they were behind in the second half. He's explosive. He was their feature back. Now you got Mr. Explosiveness as your backup. So Jalen Warren is going to be hard to tackle. Can K-State's defense stop that running back, and can they stop Deuce Vaughn? Giant question. This is classic old-school football.
Man, I don't want to look ahead, but I'm going to. If Kansas State can win at Oklahoma State and Oklahoma can beat West Virginia, then you'd be talking about both teams ranked, both teams 4-0 in Manhattan.
First time Oklahoma will have played a big-time sporting event on the road since they snuck away to the SEC. And the Big 12 fans are going to be counting on every fandom to make it awful for Texas and Oklahoma. It'll be easier in basketball. It's much easier in basketball. But if they can do it in football, the K-State fans will give it a shot. Because you know what the students do at K-State? They show up and they sit right behind the opponent's bench. And when you open the gates up, they come in an hour and a half early. So you make your most heated presentation during warm-ups. Does that make sense?
Right.
The players are kind of walking around. You let them know. Wow. If K-State's undefeated, Oklahoma's undefeated, and all the 8 remaining Big 12 schools are going, lay it on those Oklahoma football players. Everybody in the conference is going to be rooting against Oklahoma. They always do because they're the champs, right? But this time, with extra vigor. And it's a 2:30 kickoff, so there'll be plenty of time for the fans at K-State to drink as much as they want.
Wow.
And eat at the right times. 2:30 is the perfect gear-up time for fans to be at their best. So
Get yourself right. Get your mind right for
first
football.
First of all, you got to play a really good Oklahoma State team.
Right.
And this is big-time football here. K-State, amazing to be 3-0. Oklahoma State's done a good job of fighting to be 3-0. They're dead even teams, but this K-State team will not give up. They're going to grind, and they do have a better passing game than you know they do. But don't ever criticize anybody for doing what it takes to win. Play great defense and run the ball. I don't care if we throw the ball 13 times or 35 times. They'll throw the ball more. And Will Howard, the touchdown play for 68 yards, he checked to that play. He checked to that play. He sees what's going on. So he's young. He's not great. He's not Skylar Thompson, who we hope to get back. But I'm telling you, Will Howard is a smart guy, and he helps the running game go, and the passing game will be better. But, man, this is a dead-even game. And if K-State comes back with a road win, this will be the 21st time out of 26 years of the Big 12 K-State starts on the road. Chris Kleiman thought, he said, we're starting on the road. He goes, I just thought that's what K-State did every year. Well, Coach, 21 out of 26 times,
wow,
that's the way it's gone. But if you can get a win on the road against Oklahoma State and you get to play OU next, how cool would that be for K-State football? Already it's been a very good season. These are three hard games that they won.
I'm trying to put a tremendous amount of pressure on Todd Lebo to show up in Manhattan if both teams are undefeated, because he needs to be there and he needs to take the heat for, as you said, sneaking off to the SEC. And I think we can make that happen if we all put pressure on him from different angles. Todd, are you listening? We're after you.
Don't forget free tickets.
That's Todd likes that very much. That's Mr. Stan Weber. We'll take a break back after this, and we'll talk to Gary Lezak on WHB.